We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Working with you on a Thursday morning. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you, talking about all those sports. One sport again back today. First round play at the Charles Schwab Challenge at the Colonial, and the PGA Tour is underway.
I loved Michael Collins on SportsCenter yesterday talking about their practice round where they weren't social distancing. And the tweet went out by the head of the PGA saying, hey, guys, not only for safety reasons, but for appearances,
yeah,
can you guys social distance? And they kept practicing, and Michael Collins was like, and they didn't social distance anymore. They were still kind of grouped together.
Well, it's going to be interesting when this does get on TV, though, because I'm sure that's going to be a priority.
Yes.
And I know as we've talked to guys that have been getting ready for this, one of the things that comes up is these guys have all been playing golf. In a lot of places, golf courses have been open for a while. And so it's not like they're doing something new in that regard. And I'm sure at their leisure, they've been able to go out there and not necessarily be checked like that. But the PGA's got to be cognizant of the product they're putting out. So it's going to be interesting. But yeah, I heard that too. It's like, hey, guys, by the way, like, yeah, you got to at least act like,
can you try a little harder at this?
I know there's not fans here, but we got company. People are watching this.
Yeah, I imagine it was more than a tweet that the message was delivered home last night before they teed off this morning. Said, this is how you will do it.
Yeah.
Like, remember when we had the match? It was air high fives and all that, yeah, kind of stuff. So we'll see what happens going forward. But you mentioned an interesting word there, is they're going to check themselves. Well, for a sport, and for more in a sport that it does involve a lot of checking, we're delighted to talk to our...
Oh, God.
Thank
well
you.
Done. That was well done,
no,
actually.
Hey, thank you.
Was.
Thank you. I appreciate,
yeah,
that.
It's, boy, I'm worried about you, Hal.
Okay. Right. We're working on Junior, but I appreciate your, yeah, support. Yeah. Thanks very much. So for more on the NHL returning, it's returning to play, and specifically things that maybe some players have dealt with for a long time in the NHL that have come to light now, and we're dealing with them in a very open and honest way. We're delighted to be joined by Wayne Simmons, a Buffalo Sabres right wing, who is part of the NHL's Hockey Diversity Alliance. Wayne, thanks for being with us this morning. Hope you and yours are well and safe. And if you could, just tell us a little bit about the Diversity Alliance, which you're on as the executive committee, and what this group is trying to do.
Yeah, hey, guys. First of all, I want to thank you guys for having me on, obviously, to spread this important message. So I think we go back to November. Akeem Alou came out with a story of how, he was, faced with racist challenges coming up through the hockey world and how he felt it impacted him. And I think as a minority hockey player, me specifically being a black hockey player, I faced challenges quite similar to what he faced. So we decided, enough is enough. I think especially what's going on in the world today, we have, an awakening right now. And, we thought this was a great time to get in front of the NHL and speak with them and voice our opinions so that, we can have an impact on this game. So going back a few months, obviously as, being diverse hockey players, we thought it would be an important conversation to have around race and hockey at this moment. All of us have seen and experienced racism at some level of the game, so we think it's an important time, especially now in what's going on, to unite and help to improve, the NHL for future generations, going down the line here.
And Wayne, you're in Buffalo now, but you've been in the league since 08, played in Los Angeles, Philly, Nashville, and New Jersey. So I would imagine, or you tell us, do you have some of these stories as well of coming up and being in the league?
Yeah, definitely. I think when you're a black man and you're playing a predominantly white sport, things like that pop up. I think in the hockey community, you get your typical, oh, no way that happened, or we can't believe it. I think that's complete ignorance. And I think this is completely why we wanted to start the HDA. Being one of few black players in the NHL or minority players, I think there's upwards of 30 to 40 now. We've probably all gone through some sort of, you know, had some sort of racial epithet thrown at us, if not, you know, something blatant. So, you know, this is extremely important for us. And, you know, our mission is to eradicate racism and intolerance in hockey. We want to strive to create positive change within the game of hockey. We truly believe that hockey is the greatest game on earth, or obviously we wouldn't be professional hockey players. But, you know, I think to tackle these tough subjects, we know it's going to be, you know, they're going to be hard topics to talk about, especially in the hockey community. We have, like I said, only 30 to 40 probably players of color in the league. So, you know, this is something that, you know, we feel very passionate about. And, you know, we're coming to the league with this idea, and, you know, the league has, you know, reached out to us as well. So this is so far, it's going to be, we think it's going to be a great start.
Wayne, I'm wondering, you were born in Ontario, born and raised in Canada. Did you hear or see the same things north of the border here in the United States?
Yeah, I don't think it's only the United States. I think we're speaking about hockey culture in general. It happens in Canada, it happens in the States, it's happened in Europe. I've personally had, you know, things happen to me in all three places, Europe, Canada, and the United States. So we're trying to target what's going on within the hockey culture. We think this is where we can have a big impact. You know, there's a lot of kids growing up in minor hockey who, you know, they don't have that outlet. They don't have that, you know, that face that looks like them where they can go and speak besides their parents. So for us, the youth are a big thing, and, you know, it's huge. So we want to start with grassroots, and, you know, we want to be a sounding board, you know, for kids, you know, who look like us, who don't have anywhere else to go, where they can come to us and, you know, we can explain how to deal with it and, you know, things like that. We want to establish a mentor program. You know, a lot of players, like I said, you know, you're a minority in the sport of hockey, which is predominantly white. You don't have someone else to go and talk to in your sport. So, or maybe not on your team, maybe just your parents. So we want to be able to, you know, being black hockey players, minority hockey players to help out these kids firsthand.
I keep kind of being struck as Wayne Simmons is with us here on Golic and Wingo, just how lonely that's got to feel at certain times. Wayne, we all come from a background in football where, you know, we were fortunate to be a part of locker rooms that were very diverse, and I was so fortunate to get to hear a lot of these conversations. And it sounds like you said that a lot of times when you would bring this up, you were sort of met with disbelief from other people that you would try and tell. I'm curious, as you've, especially in the last couple of weeks, have you had conversations with teammates that maybe weren't as willing to listen before, where their eyes have been opened a bit now? How has that gone?
I wouldn't say weren't as willing to listen. I just think, you know, the key word for this is ignorance. And it's not, you know, sometimes it's not on purpose, sometimes it is. You never know what someone else is really experiences unless you speak with them and you actually sit down and, you know, you pick their mind and you have a conversation. And I think that's what it is. People don't want to have that conversation because it's tough. And, you know, people don't know what to say. But, you know, I think it's time now that we start having these conversations. We got to eliminate all racism in hockey. We want people to be able to come to the rink and, you know, feel comfortable in their own skin. You know, people have to be able to feel comfortable, and especially in where they're working, to be successful. And I think it's only right in the world. We're all pulling one rope here. We're all humanity, you know, for humanity's sakes. It's, you know, so I think in the NHL, we've had some players speak out, you know, some white players speak out, and I think that's a start. But at the same time, I think we have to educate and, you know, let them know, like, how we feel, where we're coming from, and why we're doing this.
Wayne, does it give you hope? I mean, looking out at another sport in NASCAR, that's another sport that is very predominantly white space and a lot of that, and what Bubba Wallace has been able to really accomplish in just recent days, speaking out, using his voice as the only black driver that is on that top level of the circuit, getting the, you know, helping get the Confederate flag banned from NASCAR events. Does seeing something like that in a space that's also predominantly white give you hope for all this?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've been paying attention to that, obviously, and I think kudos for Bubba Wallace for, you know, standing up for his beliefs. He's the only black NASCAR driver right now in the series, so I can only imagine what he's going through. I know hockey, like, like we were just speaking about, you know, is predominantly white. We have a few more faces that look like us to actually have conversations where he's the only one. So, you know, I think that's amazing to what he's doing. And, you know, kudos to NASCAR. But now I think it's, you know, what's the next step? What do we do from here on out, right? I think it's all good and, you know, great to do those things and speak about them. But what's the next step? Where do we go from here? And, you know, how do we, you know, push this all forward?
Wayne Simmons with us this morning. And Wayne, you mentioned the name Akeem Alou, and his story came out last year. It was specifically, more than anything else, things he had to deal with when he was in the minors or in junior hockey in these very small towns spread across Canada. We had Kevin Weeks on with us last week, who talked about, you know, when he grew up in a big city, in a biracial city, a multiracial city like Toronto, it wasn't an issue. But then he would go out and play junior hockey, and it would be a completely different experience in some of these towns where, you know, everyone looked the same, and then one person comes in. So we can always talk about changing things at the NHL level or at the NASCAR level or at the NFL level. But it really has to start, and you mentioned with the youth, it has to start there because these things grow up. They don't fall down.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a systematic thing, right? I think you you want to start from the bottom. Everyone comes from the bottom eventually and rises to the top. So in youth hockey, so say I'm from Toronto. So the GTHL has over 40,000 registered hockey players at the minor level. So, you know, you can only imagine how many instances happen in the GTHL of racism. I remember being a young kid playing in the GTHL and having, you know, kids throw stick to basketball, that sort of thing at me, obviously amongst, you know, other things. So, you know, I think if we start there and we educate there and we can try and kind of get some reform within the minor leagues and, you know, the youth grassroots level, we can build upwards towards the NHL to where we can, you know, actually, you know, have policies written to where, you know, it's completely non-tolerant, you know what I mean? Like, there's no tolerance level for this stuff at all. So that's an important, you know, an important thing for our group, and we're going to continue to strive, you know, to get equality for everybody under the hockey umbrella.
And under the hockey umbrella, they are actually going to play hockey. Hockey is going to resume, like the NBA, to finish their season, but hockey going right to the playoffs. And, you know, obviously we know teams left out. Sorry about that. But what do you think about how the system, what they put together? Do you think it was fair?
Yeah, usually only 16 teams make the playoffs. So what, we have 24 right now. I understand, you know, unfortunately my team's not in the mix right now. But, you know, I think the league, you know, did a pretty decent job in, you know, including those teams who, you know, had we played out the last 10 to 13 games, would have gotten a shot to make the playoffs. So, you know, I think as a hockey player, there's nothing more I'd rather be doing right now than playing hockey. But at the same time, I think the league's doing, you know, the best it can do to get things up and running right now.
Listen, every sport's trying to figure that part out of it right now. And certainly it was kudos to the NHL and the NHL Players Association and Gary Bettman to find that way to get going before anyone else really had a solid plan. Hey, Wayne, we appreciate your time this morning on a lot of important topics. Thanks so much for being with us, and hopefully we'll check back in with you later, okay?
No problem, guys. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Wayne.
Yeah. Again, you hear so many of these stories from players in hockey. And again, so many of these guys come from big cities. It's when they go to these junior hockey events and these junior hockey places or minor league teams in these little farm towns or way outside in rural Canada where some of these things really come and they're faced with it.
And now what happens? You know, Sean, the NFL with the Players Coalition that got going. You see now in hockey with the Hockey Diversity Alliance. So what now happens, right? So they form these, the talk starts, and then you want the talk, obviously, to try and lead to action.
Yeah, well, and I think in these sports like hockey and like NASCAR that are so predominantly white, that talk is even more vital because you're not getting it as much. We talk about exposure and all of this and the beauty of the locker rooms that we've been a part of in a sport like football that are so diverse. I just think you don't always get as much of that along the way. And you guys are right, harping on the juniors level. I mean, just the idea that a lot of these guys, you're going to live with a different family. You're going to live with a host family in a lot of these cities. Like, you're isolated in so many ways, and then make yourself the only black person that may be in that town or on that team, or having to go through all of that and not having the, I think what Wayne described there is giving people an outlet who may not have had it before, a sounding board for stuff like that, because going through that situation alone, I can't get over what a tremendously lonely feeling that's got.
And I asked the question so poorly to him about what he saw when he, in Ontario, being in North America, not, or in Canada, you know, and I, no, listen, we know racism is all over the world. I should have asked him, how prevalent was it where you were growing up and what you felt like? Cause you know, it is everywhere, but I mean, Canada is hockey, but still, he was an African American in a game that's predominantly white, even in the place where hockey is considered, you know, the king. So, but as they said, you know, it's everywhere, and that's their goal right now, is to try and make people aware of that and move on from it.
And again, the most important thing, give somebody a place where they can have an outlet to talk about these things, because as you said, if you're the only person that looks like you, sometimes you wander around and go, who can I talk to? And that's the voice they have there. So that's all going forward. As hockey goes forward, we continue to wait for baseball to find a way to go forward as we're in the midst of the Major League Draft. Again, the first round was yesterday. The next four rounds will be tomorrow. And during the coverage of Major League Draft, Major League Baseball Draft on ESPN, our own Carl Ravitch had a chance to talk with Commissioner Rob Manfred, as we're still waiting for baseball to find a way to get past the money. Let's not mess it up in any other way, shape, or form. What's holding them up isn't the pandemic, it's the money. So among the things that Carl Ravitch talked to Commissioner Rob Manfred about was, how many games do we actually expect to play? Because he did say there will be baseball, 100%, in some way, shape, or form. But here's the commissioner saying exactly how many games they're looking at.
I'm a big believer in the process. I would prefer to negotiate a new agreement with the MLBPA that gets us more games and resolves the issues that have separated us amicably. But at the end of the day, we negotiated for the right in March to start the season on a number of games that we select in these particular circumstances. And if we have to, we'll exercise that right.
Sounds like the only thing in that agreement that was actually, like, really agreed to, and honestly, it seems like everything else is ambiguous. I mean, if it wasn't, we'd have seen it, right? I mean, it would, like everything else, it would have been public somehow, some way. Everything else seems to be a gray area, except for that. We can impose games if all this doesn't work out. So that's why he's saying there will be baseball, because if everything else falls apart, he's going to impose a number of games.
And as Trey pointed out, when you say, yeah, we want to play the most games possible at the price that we're comfortable with, and that's the thing that's hanging out in the ether right now with all of this. And he said, we'd like to go back and renegotiate, you know, based off of what we've got now, renegotiate that March agreement. Well, yeah, I mean, you can't do that at this point. Like, we know what happened in that March agreement, and we heard about that yesterday, was this idea that it was phrased very ambiguously around the subject of pay as it relates to stadiums. Although the commissioner, again, when he was talking to Carl Ravitch, made the point that he believes that was about one thing, the presence of fans.
The March 26th agreement was premised on the belief, mutual belief, that we were going to be in a position where we would be playing baseball games in full stadiums. And I think that we find ourselves in a situation where we're going to be playing largely without fans, if not exclusively without fans. And that altered the economic landscape and really required another negotiation.
The one part I don't agree with is that, yes, it was done with the idea that you were going to have fans, but where in that, and I'm curious how they discussed this, because we know the way it's been in baseball. We know that they don't have a salary cap. They don't share revenue, which means, what did you say back then that would give the MLBPA any indication that we would be proceeding in a way that's any different from the way that we always have? That, yes, we're all planning on the presence of fans there, which has a number of different effects and iterations as this goes forward outside of just salary. What indication did you give them that, hey, if we're not playing with fans, we're potentially going to have to take some of this money? Because I don't have never gotten the feeling from the MLBPA since then that that would have been something that they seemed at all open to, even if you took this thing back to March, because that seems, again, like the hardest line in the sand that this union has ever drawn.
As we had Jesse Rogers on yesterday, he said that were 12 sections in that March agreement about money, and nothing was stated about the fans in the stadium having to do with them taking less money. And you know why I believe that? Is because even here, the commissioner is using it was under the presumption.
Yes.
Listen, you're not saying under the presumption. If you have something in hard, cold writing that you can show that says, look, we agreed to this, and it says if there are stadiums aren't full, we renegotiate your money. You know, or he would be saying that.
Yes.
He's saying we were all under the presumption. Not a lot of contracts are going to work that way when you're saying we're under the presumption.
You're 100% right. And taking it one step further, considering the acrimony and the distrust that has gone on between these two sides, why would you presume anything along
you
those
can't.
Lines? You would why would it. You even think about yep. presuming that?
You would do it because you're afraid then that if you brought that up, it would be the non-starter like it is now. And so you didn't really say anything. You put off the uncomfortable conversation till later. If you don't want to break up with your girlfriend now, you just keep putting it off and then do it at the most inopportune moment, like as Buster Olney said to us, in the last pew of some sort of memorial ceremony where everyone else is trying to go about their business and mourn in the right way. And so I think that really seems to be what it is, because do we think, based on any reaction we've gotten from the players, they would have been receptive even before all this happened to saying, if there are no fans in the stands, you will take less than your prorated full salaries? Do we think based on anything baseball's players association has said,
zero.
That's possible.
No.
So if that's not the case, then I think Major League Baseball, in my mind, assumed that, all right, we can't bring that up with them right now, or else we're not going to get this signed going here forward. We'll just wait till later on when there could be more pressure on them to cave to this, because the public would come up in all of this, because that would be a part of it. Because if you were to tell me, hey, Major League Baseball Players Association, if this happens, we might not be able to play as many games because we're going to lose money. That might be something that the guys go, all right, we understand, given some of the limitations, we might not be able to play as many games, but you're going to pay us our whole bleeping salary.
Just like though baseball is trying to, and this is again the numbers game, we talk the simple math, this is less simple math, where the league is trying to figure out how much money, the least amount of money we can lose. The players are saying, okay, what's the most money we can get out of this? And I don't know where that is. If it's 86 games at 75% prorated or 70 games at 100% prorated. I don't know where everybody's number comes up there. That's something the union needs to find their line, just like baseball needs to find their line of, okay, if we give up a percentage, we need to give up, play this many games to make up for it if they go less games and we get 100%.
And I think just based on the backdrop of all of this, which we know is another looming CBA negotiation after all this is done, the players would probably look and say, you know what? Taking short-term, less overall money to make sure we preserve that stance that we are never going to be a part of a revenue split and never be a part of a salary cap might be worth whatever that loss is, provided it's not monumental in the ways that right now it doesn't seem like. It seems like we're dealing within a pretty established range.
Despite what Diamondbacks owner Ken Kendrick said the other day about, hey, in the middle of this negotiation, we really should have a salary cap.
We're in the deal zone, though.
Are we? It still doesn't feel like, as Jeff passes it, I think we're in the vicinity.
Yeah.
The deal zone. Doesn't feel like we're really in the deal zone yet, and it's June 11th. Coming up, the day of paying Major League players their full rate, prorated salary for more than 80 games feels like it's passed. Has the day of paying running backs big deals also come to an end? We'll talk to a running back who was one time the biggest of deals in the NFL. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. Glad you're with us. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo, and the Pugs in the Golic family basement this morning. So we had Damian Woody on this morning, and we heard the sound in there from Patrick Mahomes. And he said he thought the real keynote and change from the NFL's perspective was when the face of the NFL, Patrick Mahomes, I'm sorry, Hall of Famer Patrick Mahomes, stepped up and was a part of that video. And that got everybody up and making notice about this. And that's when the NFL's reaction came the very next day. And it feels like if the guy who is, whether you believe it or not, is irrelevant, who is the face of the league right now after a second year as a starter and has an MVP and a Super Bowl win and a Super Bowl MVP on his mantelpiece, you better start paying attention to the things that matter to him.
Well, I think that's true at the top end of the NFL right now in a lot of ways. Like, you could argue the four best quarterbacks in football are black quarterbacks right now. So there are voices. I mean, Deshaun Watson's been pretty vocal about some of the things going on at Clemson right now, about a name they want taken off the honors college there.
DeAndre Hopkins as well.
You say DeAndre Hopkins, but I guess I mean from the quarterback perspective of, we've looked traditionally in the face of the league, tends to be a quarterback because it's the position that garners so much attention. And now, so many of the top faces of the league at that position are black quarterbacks or African-American quarterbacks who are letting their voice be heard on these things. And Patrick Mahomes, we know, has been such a superstar since he came onto the scene in so many ways that that is an important voice. There's no doubt about it.
I think more now than ever, people are looking at who's getting involved and who's not.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that time where you're looked upon, you know, with kind of an eyebrow raise if you're just standing on the sidelines, right?
Yep.
That there needs to be something for some cause. There need to be vocal about things now, and you can't just kind of say, well, other people will handle it.
Ryan Clark said that to us when he was on the other day. He said, you are either anti-racist or you are on the other side at this point, and there is really no room for a middle ground now because those battle lines have been drawn.
And we had Dan Quinn on, the Falcons head coach, and he brought up that same topic, basically saying, you know, As a man whose job it is to lead a team, he understands how important it is to be with his players on the things that they feel most important. That's why he and GM Thomas Dimitroff did join those teammates on the march to the governor's office in Atlanta last week.
And I still go back to what Richard Sherman, again, one of the smarter players that we have in this league without question, when he tweeted, listen, it's fine when we say something, meaning African Americans, he said, but a lot of people will say, yeah, okay, heard it before. He said, that's why when the white quarterbacks step out and say some things, you know, are with us on things, that carries a lot of weight. And you mentioned it earlier. Tom Brady has been doing that. Aaron Rodgers has been doing that. We just saw all that went on with Drew Brees in that situation as well. Trevor Lawrence from the college football side. So it gets very interesting on who you now hear from.
And I think that's going to be the interesting way to go about this, because Drew Brees was a very different access point to this in that Drew came out, his initial statement made a lot of people very upset, and it reignited all the old feelings and conversations that we had thought we had gotten through, we had gotten to the core of and addressed, but clearly still had some things to clean up, and that was important. But the swiftness, and we talked about this with NASCAR, how quickly that changed from Drew looking at that situation, saying I'm wrong, which is, you know, one thing in all of this, and having the, you know, conversations with his teammates, to going out and then tweeting back at the President of the United States when all of a sudden he's talking to Drew Brees. It's getting you to a different space on that. And I think all of those parts involved are why we're seeing so much start to happen so soon.
All right, and for more on this and everything else that's going on in the NFL, we're delighted to be joined by LaDainian Tomlinson, Pro Football Hall of Fame running back. LT, thanks for being with us this morning. First of all, as a former player, what has been your reaction to the way the NFL has sort of responded to the things they're seeing playing out across the country?
Well, I think the players obviously have been inspiring, to say the least. You know, I love what Roger came out and said on the video, but I would love to see the owners get behind it. You know, obviously, that's the next step in all of this is, you know, the owners, and not just the sport of football, but basketball and baseball and hockey, these owners are the most powerful people in our country. And so if they get behind this and they want to see change, real change happen at the legislation level, then I think that's when change actually happens. So, I mean, you know, most owners haven't said anything yet.
So that's what I want to see. I think that's the next step. Protesting has been great. All that stuff is great to raise the awareness, you know, which is what's going on right now. But in my opinion, until our owners get behind this, we're going to still just kind of be running in mud, if you, so to speak.
And LT, I would imagine it would be more than the talk, too, because you may get statements. We've gotten statements from, you know, Ashad Khan and some. But then it's what's actionable, correct? What are the actionable things these powerful owners need to do in your mind?
You're absolutely right. I mean, and think about this, guys. You know, these owners, most of the time, they're the ones that are hosting these campaigns for these political people. You know, these presidential campaigns, a lot of times, they host events for them. You know, and so they're sitting at the table. And so I don't think there's anything, you know, they can easily, in my opinion, start the conversations about real change, you know, with social injustice reform and police reform. They can start those conversations and really get to the people that can actually change these laws. They can get to them. You know, a lot of the players, you got to protest over and over again, and then hopefully you get invited to the White House or something like that, like Malcolm Jenkins and those guys have before. But rarely does that happen. The owners can get that done right away.
And LaDainian, I'm curious because one of the other groups that we know has a chance to influence a lot of that, and people have said this time and time again, are also the white quarterbacks, some of the guys that have been faces of this league. You were a teammate of Drew Brees's for a while. What did you make of everything that he went through from his initial comments to now what he has become and very, you know, much putting on wax right now, being an ally for change going forward?
Yeah, well, I've said this a long time ago that, you know, I was pretty much disappointed, you know, a few years ago when this first started happening and Kaepernick first kneeled to try to raise awareness for police brutality. I first said, man, we need our white brothers and sisters, especially our white quarterbacks, to step up and get behind this, and they didn't, you know. And so now I think Drew, you know, I think his emotions got the best of him initially. You know, I do think because he was raised in the way that he was raised, you know, he had two grandfathers, obviously, like he said, that fought in the war, and so those were his views. He never thought about his brother's views, the black guys in that locker room and the guys he's played with and grew up with, being from Texas. He didn't think about their views. You know, he got selfish and thought about his own views. But I got to give him credit as well, because what a great leader does is own up to their mistakes. And I really believe, I know Drew, I know his heart. I really believe he was hurt by it, he was saddened by it because of his comments. And after he thought about it, went back and talked to some of his friends, he realized that he needed to be on the right side of history and fight with the guys that he so dearly loved and know these guys.
Listen, that certainly has been the case ever since the initial comments. And look, to be fair to Drew, I mean, this is a guy that gave $5 million to the New Orleans community, which was so hit by COVID-19. And he's actually gone to the African American community in New Orleans again and helped people register to vote. It was just a misstep at a really bad time that had a lot of visceral reaction for a lot of real reasons for a lot of people.
You can be wrong and still be right about a lot of other things the way that Drew has been.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and you know, at the time, you know, Stephen A. brought this up, you know, right when it first happened. The question that was asked of him, you know, it can stump anybody. You know, it really can, the way the question was asked. Instead of saying, hey, what's going on with all the, you know, social injustices today and guys out protesting, it was asked about guys kneeling. And his initial thought went right back to, you know, what mainstream America obviously thought about that years ago. So, I mean, I agree with you guys. It was just a misstep, in my opinion, knowing the guy.
LaDainian Thomas is joining us, Hall of Fame running back. So to finish up here on where it's going, and I make the comparison to NASCAR. Back 2015, they made an effort to get rid of the Confederate flag that fell flat. Now, yesterday, the Confederate flag is out of NASCAR. Fans cannot bring it anywhere. in the NFL, Colin Kaepernick knelt in 2016, and we saw what went on there. We did see a players' coalition start, so we saw some bit of change. Do you think now in the NFL, with what's going on with the players all speaking up, do you believe we will see more change? Do you think it's heading in that right direction?
You know, I'm optimistic, guys, that we are heading in the right direction, because there is more and more talk, not just at this level, and the players and professional athletes and celebrities are speaking up, but we're now starting to hear politicians speak up about changing laws. You know, and you guys know, like I know, that's what it's going to take. We can talk till we're blue in the face, and we can protest, and we can kneel, and we can do all these demonstrations. But until, you know, we get to know our local officials, these political folks that are putting people in office at the local level, even in your own community, it's not going to change. And so that's where you want to make the change. You get to know the people in your community. That's, you know, the city councilmen, the mayors, those type of folks that can make real change at the local level. And then it spreads nationally to the federal level.
Well, Danian Tomlinson with us this morning. And speaking of community, your group of running backs, the community that you played in the NFL, are in this weird situation where we got a couple of contracts for some guys. They didn't live up to it, and now people are reevaluating the position again. Christian McCaffrey got paid, but now we're looking at guys like Dalvin Cook, who's saying, hey, just throw me a little bone here. I was pretty productive. What do you think's going to happen with that situation there? Because obviously he's outplayed his contract, but you know how this goes, LT. Not everybody is you and can stay healthy for all those years, and people have real concerns about paying a running back now.
Yeah, and Dalvin has no leverage because he hasn't played a full season. He hasn't been healthy for a full season. And so that's where the problem lies there. You know, teams are so afraid of running backs, and as you mentioned, the injury. That's the whole issue in all of this, is how long can a running back last? And so Dalvin, as explosive and as good as he is, and he's been, he's a great player, he just hasn't been healthy a full season. And so I don't know if I can count on that long term, but what I would do, he has outplayed his contract. I don't think there's anything wrong with giving him more money this year and say, okay, Dalvin, prove it to me now. I want to see you play 16-plus games, and if you can do that, then we'll come back to the table and we'll get an extension done.
Yeah, we'll see if that's the way it plays out. And you know, LT was one of the great dual threats of time. Isn't in the 1,000-1,000 club, but I just would like to point out, in 2003, he ran for 1,645 yards, had 13 touchdowns, averaged over 5 yards a carry, and backed that up with 100 receptions for 725 yards and 4 scores.
So and didn't make the Pro Bowl.
Don't even go there with me on that one. We had long discussions about that years ago, LT. I don't want to relive that at the moment.
Wow, incredible.
But we appreciate your time and your appreciate your time and your insights this morning. Be
Thanks,
well,
LT.
Okay?
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Yeah. What a dual threat he was.
Didn't make the Pro Bowl that year. Again, there's a lot to go into there, which we'll unpack at a later time. Much more on everything when we come back.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
Give you a revelation here. I've been drunk before, okay? Been Sick. Pretty drunk before, all right?
Nick. Get out of here.
Nice.
It's Golic and Wingo.
We cover the tough topics.
Well,
getting drunk, man.
We speak truth. Oh, wait a minute. That's Will. I'm sorry.
We don't have a monopoly on the truth, but I think I think we might be get better at getting drunk than Will.
Oh, I think so too.
And I know Will would probably defend that because Will considers himself a guy he could sit at the bar and have a beer with.
Yeah.
I just think we'd have a few more.
All I want to know is
that sit at the bar and have a beer is a completely different discussion than go hard all night long.
Well, and also, has Will ever been drunk during a show? Because I'm hammered.
Yeah, I'd say that's the other thing you have to worry
good
about.
Good to know. Appreciate it. You know, I thought that was just your cologne.
The gauntlet has been thrown down, Billy Kane. Let's see how bout it the Bill Kane show really is.
This is real uncomfortable radio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's Golic and Wingo brought to you by Pennzoil. Crude oil is crude. Natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas and not crude. Gives you unbeatable engine protection. Proof is in the Pennzoil based on Sequence 4A wear testing using SAE 5W30.
Always great to talk to LaDainian Tomlinson as we did the last segment. Of course, Pro Football Hall of Famer does great work for the NFL Network. And, of course, we combined with the NFL Network this year for the draft in very unusual circumstances. So that was fun.
It was. And I'm still, you know, and we're going to start, obviously, as this keeps going to sports coming back. It's just stuck in my head right now. We had Dan Quinn on earlier, the head coach for the Atlanta Falcons, about the fact that he may not see his players until July 28th. I can't tell everybody how unheard of that is in today's game where coaches, especially the strength coach and players, are all working together at least to like the third week of June, starting in April, and then they have about a month off before they go to camp to have all this time and never have been in front of the strength coach or work together and then to start practicing. Of man, the breath holding that is going to be from the coaches about a quad or a hammy or a calf or some kind of little nagging injury that just sticks with you because this is so out of the ordinary.
Well, and you mentioned it before and you guys have said it. We talked about this a bunch that, oh, well, this is the way it used to be done. Like guys used to do this plenty of times. That's fine, but none of these players have any.
That's exactly
right.
It doesn't. I was 6 weeks of training camp, 2 a days in pads, sometimes 3 a days in pads, and you kind of got in shape, you know, while you were doing it. Even before me, they actually did use it to get in shape. You're right. These guys are not used to that. These guys are used to that itinerary and that workout and working out with others and working out with a strength coach, and now they're on their own. Who was it? Damian Woody said, not all of them are great professionals at it. You know, and all of a sudden you got to do it on your own. Are they doing everything they need to be doing to be ready when they show up July 28th?
That's the interesting part. And they send you the books. And even when you were, you know, not at the facility during the offseason, they'd send you stuff. But
yes,
it was always interesting to notice. Like I remember when I was a rookie in Pittsburgh, you go on the workout program that everyone else gets in there. But I would see like guys like Ryan Clark or Troy Polamalu at that point who were doing their entire own workout routine that over the course of their professional career, being great pros, they had built up and done. A lot of other people need the direction. Not everyone is self-sufficient like that. That's what leads to some guys catching punts over their house, by the way. A thank you to everyone who sent us videos of them fielding punts as part of our home Olympic trials brought to you by California Almonds. 6 grams of natural protein, fuel your whatever day, every day with California Almonds. But not everybody has that resource
that
professionalism. And so for everyone else, it's a bit of a mixed bag now.
And that's why I've said it before and I'll say it again. Teams like the Saints who have a veteran leadership and a veteran team in place with very few moving parts are going to be at a huge advantage to start this season. Now, the other teams can catch up.
Right.
But to start the season, teams like that will be in a big, big gap ahead of time. Coming up on Friday, Golic and Wingo Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa, Laura Rutledge, and much more. Be safe, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.